Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than Nottinghamshire's comms intern, Mr. Matt Wiley. So Matt, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming back onto the podcast for, I believe, a sixth show in a row. You're producing quite the streak here on the County Cricket Podcast at the moment. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, really good, thanks, mate. Yeah. Recording a day later than usual, aren't we? So we've had 24 hours since I got back from Lourdes. But yeah, fab week. Really, really enjoyable down there. And no, today's gone well. And looking forward to getting stuck into what was a good week of action.
Well, it most certainly was a very interesting week of county championship action, to say the least. I mean, obviously a lot of draws, as we'll discuss upon in today's episode, but the two victories that we saw, very, very impressive indeed, as we'll get into to the analysis. But Matt, first and foremost, you mentioned about spending some time at the home of cricket. How was that over the weekend?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was almost kind of quite pleasant that there was a rain delay. I mean, not that anybody wanted a rain delay, because it ruined what would have been a pretty good chance for not to go for victory. But during the rain delay, I just kind of had an opportunity to just walk around. And because large parts of the ground, you know, I don't blame when people had kind of up sticks and gone home because they were fed up with seeing it rain. There were large parts of the ground that were just empty and you could just go for a wander. And it was just, honestly, there isn't a bad view in the house, is there? You just go around all the stands and this, so, you know, it feels bigger than it is. It feels bigger than a 30,000-seater stadium. And then, yeah, that pavilion is just, it's like a stately home, isn't it? It's just wonderful. Yeah, fantastic venue, fantastic view from the media centre. Pity about the result in the end, bit frustrating, but yeah, brilliant. Haven't got a bad word to say about it.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic to hear, to be honest, mate. Very, very happy that you enjoyed your time down in London. And we will, of course, discuss that game between Middlesex and Notts in a lot more detail as today's show progresses. But before we jump the gun and talk about the Division 2 matches, let's first and foremost start with the ones in Division 1. And there's no better place to start, this week at least, than in the West Country for the Cider Derby, where Somerset absolutely annihilated Gloucestershire by an innings and 246 runs in Bristol. Now, just to give this some context in terms of the results, this is the second largest winning margin in Somerset's 147-year first-class history. The largest ever county championship win as well. Might I just add, so a fantastic result for the West Country outfit, to say the very least. And in terms of the game itself, interestingly enough, for those who weren't watching the game, Gloucestershire actually won the toss and elected to have a bowl first in this game, which unfortunately for the home side seemed to backfire quite spectacularly, as Tom Lammonby, he scored 76, and Matt Renshaw, who scored 94, put on a wonderful 172-run opening partnership to lay a solid foundation for the visitors. Now, in fairness, Gloucestershire, spearheaded by loanee Zach Chappell, did actually start to wrestle back some control in this game. They took three wickets over the course of the next 15 overs. But the real key moment in this game, and Matt, I want to know your thoughts about this and the subsequent knock which came as a result of it, the drop of Tom Abell in the 50s by Miles Hammond in the slips. Was that the turning point in this game?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, you can't drop a player like that of that quality. He's going to make you pay, isn't he? He's found some form recently, hasn't he? And I think that's been the driving factor behind, you know, I think it would have been pretty unimaginable to think that Somerset would rack up almost 600 just a few weeks ago. So, yeah, he's led from the front and, yeah, you just, catches win matches, don't they? And I know it's not quite as rhyming, but drops lose matches, they do. And yeah, I mean, I suppose you could argue the case that even if Abell had got zero in both innings, Somerset would have still won by an inning. But even if Abell had got zero in that one inning, Somerset would have still won. They were so dominant. But yeah, you can't be dropping a player like that.
Well, you most certainly can't. And as I mentioned, went on to score 142 from 246 balls, 17 fours, 1-6. He just looks in brilliant form at the moment. I mentioned this, actually, after the Surrey game. He just needed that one big innings to find some confidence, get that form back. And honestly, long may this continue. Tom Abel, when he is in rhythm, is one of the best and most aesthetically pleasing batsmen in this entire country. So big shout out to Tom Abel this week. Thought he was absolutely superb. And someone else who I just wanted to give a mention to, aside from Abel, Renshaw and Lamonby, Lewis Gregory, absolutely barnstorming knock in Bristol this week. 89 from 89 balls, 10 fours and 4 sixes. An outstanding supporting role, to say the very least, from the experienced all-rounder. And as a result of all of these excellent knocks, Somerset amassed a mammoth total of 591 for 7 by the end of their first innings. Now, in response to this, unfortunately for Gloucestershire and, of course, the home fans in attendance in Bristol this week, the home side were only able to produce scores of 186 all-outs and 159 all-outs, with Loney from Warwickshire, Jacob Bethel, being the standout batter with a score of 61 in the second innings. And Matt, actually, talking to Jacob Bethel, before we analyse his performance this week, because it was quite superb from the Warwickshire youngster, I just wanted to ask, actually, your thoughts on the three loans that Gloucestershire brought through ahead of this game. Obviously, Zach Chappell, he's come in on a one-month loan. They've got Brad Wheel on an initial two-week loan. And then the big talking point was Jacob Bethel, because he's only come in for the time being for one game. Now, bear in mind that Gloucestershire do have other batting options. They've got the likes of Tom Lace, Will Naish, Ben Wells is another one, the younger rounder Luke Charlesworth. Are you in favour of a one-game loan? I know it's a big game, obviously, with the side of Derby and all the emotions attached with it. But were you personally in favour of bringing in Bethel for a one-game loan, or are you not too happy with that?
Well, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because you have to give, you know, the one thing that developing young sports people of any persuasion need, they need certainty, don't they? They need to know where they're going to be for the next 6, 12, 18 months. And yes, loans come with that. You can't get in the team at your parent club. You go out on loan, you gain experience and you build it up. But I don't think I would agree with saying one game loan, it doesn't help anyone, because it doesn't give Bethel the certainty that he needs. He doesn't know that if he's going to play in the next game. So where's the motivation for him to produce the performance? I mean, obviously, there is a little bit for him to impress Warwickshire, but, you know, he's got no real connection with Gloucestershire. And if he knows that he's not going to be there, then I'm not saying that he won't work hard for the team, but he doesn't necessarily have that drive that he knows that he needs to, because, you know, you need that push to work hard for the team. And if, you know, you're not going to be there next week, then it's almost, you don't have that you need. And then also the simple fact that Warwickshire, if he then goes back to Warwickshire, he's not going to be in the team, is it? So why would you play? Yeah, why would you play him for just one game? It's a strange one for me. But at the same time, can you see it from Warwickshire's point of view, in that they don't want to lose him for too long? Let's say if he does impress, then he goes straight into the Warwickshire team. We'll have to wait and see, won't we, if he does go in. I mean, he batted very well. He can bowl a little bit, didn't he? I know he's a little bit. He didn't bowl very much in Somerset's only innings. But then again, you know, nobody did they really? It was, I think, again, when you're looking at this sort of thing, you have to analyse it in the context of the game and the fact that Somerset basically dominated the whole Gloucestershire bowling attack. Yeah, it's a funny one, but I think we won't really know the consequences for another couple of weeks, and let's see if he can make it into the Warwickshire team.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's funny you mentioned that, Matt, because today in the second 11, T20, Warwickshire actually played Glamorgan at Portland Road, and he scored 74 from 29 balls. Jacob Bethel genuinely looks to be in scintillating form at the moment, so would not be surprised at all if he actually does make at least one of the Warwickshire teams in 2022. And to be honest, I mentioned it beforehand, he really stole the show in this game for Gloucestershire. It's just a shame that he's not a Gloucestershire player. He's a Warwickshire loanee. So if anything, the only real beneficiaries of this knock are Jacob and Warwickshire County Cricket Club. So it's a real tough one. I can see why it did generate so much conversation on social media, in particular from Gloucestershire fans. But again, if we look at the wider context of this before we move on to the rest of Division 1, Matt, where do Gloucestershire go from here? Because I do feel a lot of sympathy for them. They've lost Chris Dent and Ben Charlesworth through injury, David Payne as well, struggling with injuries at the moment. They've lost Mohammed Amir to injury, Nassim Shah to injury. it does seem to be one of those seasons where everything is, for the time being, going wrong for the West Country outfit. What can they do to reverse this stroke of bad luck after the T20 Blast block?
I think that T20 Blast block could be ideal for them, because obviously, you know, you take the reset. And I think, I suppose it sounds a bit cliched, but you have to, they've got to stay on this path for me. I know they're winless, but they're not winless because they've been a terrible side. You know, they've competed. I know, you know, they were off the pace in this one, and everybody has a bad game, but this hasn't been a repeated thing. They've not been continually crushed the whole time, have they? They've run some very good teams very close. And, you know, Yorkshire maybe going to finish fourth or fifth, let's say. They went right through, didn't they, with them, ultimately. And they've just repeatedly, I think, on a couple of two or three occasions, they've just come out on the wrong end of a couple of close games, haven't they? So they can compete. You know, they're not whipping boys. The bottom, but they're not whipping boys. And I think it does show the quality that they've got in their ranks. So I think almost, I think, if we allow them some time to go through the T20, which they're good at, you know, we've seen in the past that they're a good white ball outfit. Let them do that. Let them regain that bit of confidence and just keep reminding them that they're a good team. You know, it's so, so tough when in professional sport, when performances are good, but results aren't coming. Because it's like you almost start to think, well, what else can we do? We're performing to the best of our ability and we're just coming out on the wrong end of these results. But the reassuring factor is that those results will come. You've just got to keep going. And fundamentally as well, if Gloucestershire do stay up, if they remain in Division 1, then that's an achievement for them. You know, they were promoted in 2019, weren't they? So they're only just sort of developing into this Division 1 team. So I think, yeah, stay the course and the result will come. And ultimately, you know, just one or two wins, it's so close, isn't it? That just one or two wins or even just a couple more draws could make all the difference, and that boosts them right up to sixth, seventh and into the mid-table.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, won't we, Matt? But unfortunately for Gloucestershire fans, it does seem as though 2022 has the makings of a relegation dogfight. It's going to be a very, very tough season for the West Country outfit. But again, they do have that grit, they do have a lot of character, and fingers crossed for the glorious Gloucesters, they can produce a bit of a fight back heading into the rest of this summer. And just one final performance I had to mention before we move on to the Roses game, the other big derby of this week up in Leeds. Jack Leach, really impressive, and I'm absolutely buzzing for him, because Jack Leach, we all know, had a pretty tough winter, in particular in the Ashes, but he's got off to a really good start in the Championship for Somerset in 2022. He took 5 for 49 in the first innings, 3 for 41 in the second. And I was really impressed with the way in which he bowled. I thought he got lovely control, lovely flight, lovely drift. Great catch as well from Tom Abel in the second innings to give him one of his wickets behind the shoulder. Really impressed with Jack Leach in this game. And again, long may it continue. Fingers crossed he can have another strong summer in both the Somerset and maybe in England shirts as well. But Matt's moving on from the West Country then. Let's go up to Leeds. Let's go to your home county of Yorkshire, where the White Rose and the Red Rose of Lancashire played out a thrilling draw up at Headingley. So, Matt, first and foremost, I have to ask for your opinion on something. And again, it's something we've already brought up in the podcast, but the decision at the toss. Steve Patterson winning the toss, electing to have a bowl first. Were you in favour of that decision? Yes or no?
Oh, well, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? And you say no, wouldn't you? But it's a thing that Yorkshire have often done. We've often chosen to bowl first. And I can understand why he would do it, because he, you know, as a bowler, he's got that perspective and he clearly thinks that there's something in it and that's his area, that's his speciality. And I suppose as a skipper who is a bowler, that's why you want to, he feels he knows more about the bowling aspect, so he opts to have a go. But yeah, it obviously it did ultimately turn out to be the wrong decision, but he's not the first to make it, and he certainly won't be the last. You know, it is a really, really tough call, but I think it's that quality in that Lancashire batting lineup, and Yorkshire are absolutely shorn of bowlers at the moment. So maybe you're just thinking, let's rip into them. Let's, if I think it's easier certainly in red ball cricket, it's easier to really go hard at a team when you're bowling, isn't it? Because, you know, you can attack a little bit towards the later stages of an inning in a red ball game, maybe when you've got your six and seven who are sort of big hitting or your bowlers who just can give it a bit of a thwack. But when you're batting and you're opener, it's the opener's job, obviously, to see off the new ball, to be a little bit slow, to be quite methodical. And if you're thinking, we're up for this game, and especially with it being a derby, you can go, you can really get at them early on. When you're bowling, you can, you know, you maybe pitch it up. You might concede a few runs, but at least you might pick up a few wickets, especially at 11:30 on the first morning. So if that was his idea behind it, to sort of be a bit aggressive and really try and get themselves into the game, then I suppose it's worth considering. But yeah, ultimately that quality in that Lancashire batting lineup was just a little bit too much, wasn't it?
Yes, it was on this occasion. But it's funny we're mentioning actually about the toss, because within the first 11 overs, not only did Yorkshire bowl incredibly disciplined line and length, they also did have lengths at 12 for 2, because Jordan Thompson dismissed both Luke Wells and Josh Bohannon. So in those first few overs, it looked like a tactical masterstroke. But unfortunately for Yorkshire, Keaton Jennings just so happened to produce the goods for Lancashire yet again. His third consecutive first-class century. And in two championship matches in 2020 so far, he scored 348 runs at an average of 174. Matt, I know for you, obviously, as a Yorkshire fan, he is on the wrong side of the Pennines at the moment. But 238 from 408 balls, 32 fours, and he looked so assured, so comfortable, so confident at the crease. He just made that game his own up at Headingley this week. How impressive was that performance from Keaton Jennings?
Yeah, well, like you said, what else can you say about it, really? It's just that, it's that sort of performance that just completely demoralises the bowling attack, isn't it? It's like, you know, whatever you're trying, you just can't seem to get anywhere to him. And I mean, ultimately, you know, he was run out, wasn't he? Essentially, to the bowlers, in terms of when what you're actually bowling to him, he was effectively not out, wasn't he? Because none of the bowlers actually managed to produce a delivery that got rid of him. It was, you know, it was the field that got rid of him. So, yeah, it's just that sort of dominant batting opening performance, isn't it, really? And, you know, obviously I said about the role of the openers is to stick around, and the role of the openers is to, you know, dig in. And he did that. And then, you know, he didn't bat slowly, but he just came in with intent and he knew what his job was. And yeah, ultimately, he didn't have to do it well, did he? And then Lancashire ended up getting their, I believe, their highest ever score, not just at Headingley, but against Yorkshire in both counties' history. So a bit sobering, but I think we've known for a while they're going to finish above us. It's just a matter of hoping that they don't win the whole thing, frankly.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we? I know my Lancastrian co-host Joe, he would disagree with that, obviously, as a fan of the Red Rose. But as you mentioned, Lancashire with the bat in hand this week, absolutely sensational. 566 for 9 declared. Keaton Jennings obviously being the standout with that 238. But Stephen Croft, he chips in with a brilliant 104. And skipper Dane Vilas also adding to the runs with a well-made 82. It was a superb performance with the bat in hand from the Red Rose up in Leeds this week. And in response to this, Yorkshire themselves got off to a pretty sluggish start, it does have to be said. Adam Live, Dowd Milan, Tom Lowton and George Hill all falling within the first 30 overs of the game to leave the host wobbling on a score of 68 for 4. But from that slow start, we have to talk about one man, don't we, to be honest, Matt? Former England captain by the name of Joseph Edward Root, because he was absolutely magnificent in this game. 147 from 218 balls, 13 fours, plenty of time spent at the crease. Just how integral was that knock in the wider context of this Roses derby?
Well, it's colossal, wasn't it? I mean, if he got nothing, or if he flamed out and maybe scored a 10 or something like that, then we would have lost that game, plain and simple. I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head if that Jimmy Anderson delivery was the first or the second inning. We can probably come on to that. But yeah, no, that it was just absolutely integral, wasn't it? 100%. It's that sort of, it's what he does, isn't it? he's done it for England so many times over the past, you know, 18 months, 2 years, that it's almost got silly, really. He comes in when the chips are down and he carries the team, doesn't he? And I'm not saying he carried Yorkshire to quite the same extent that he carried England. I mean, you know, we were at least managed to get to 48 for two before he came in. But yeah, it was just crucial. And yeah, frankly, that draw would have been a loss if it wasn't for that inning.
100%. And aside from Joe Root as well, who we of course know possesses so much class, composure, assurance at the crease, someone else who is just having the time of his life in county cricket right now is a certain Harry Brook. Now, unfortunately, in this game, in the first innings, he was actually dismissed for less than 50 runs for the first time in this year's tournament. He was dismissed for 41 after being stumped off the bowling of Matt Parkinson. But in the second innings, again, you know what they say, form is temporary, class is permanent, even though he's in scintillating form anyway. 82 not out from 157 balls, just ushered the home side through to that draw quite superbly up in Headingley this week. And just to read out his stats, in the 2022 County Championship so far, 8 innings, 758 runs at an average of 151.6 and a strike rate of 76.25. Matt, it is the million-dollar question. Will he be appearing in an England shirt in the summer of 2022? What are your thoughts on that, personally?
Yes, he has to, doesn't he? I mean, for my money, that is... You have to pick on form anyway, don't you? It's like, you plain and simple, that is such a massive driving factor in cricket. And, you know, if you're seeing the ball well and, you know, you're comfortable in your own game, that's how, you know, that's basic. That's basic batting form, isn't it? That's how things work. And so, yeah, it just should be. I suppose I'm wary of maybe calling him up a little bit too soon, shall we say. And, you know, obviously we've got to face New Zealand, haven't we, who are the best test team in the world, or certainly the world champions if the rankings have changed. But, yeah, it's a really difficult one because, obviously, I don't want to lose him. I want to keep him at Yorkshire. I certainly want to keep him at Yorkshire for the T20 Blast because, frankly, I would say that's almost, frighteningly, he's a little bit stronger in the Blast, isn't he, because he's such an aggressive, big-hearted player that he hits it so far. But you have to take into account his personal aspirations, and I can't... It's selfish. It's selfish as a Yorkshire fan to say, oh, no, don't go to England, just keep playing for us. Forget about your own aspirations and your own hopes and dreams. And, of course, he will want to play for England. And the way to play for England is to score runs in great numbers and repeatedly. And he's done that, hasn't he? So, yeah, he deserves a shot. Whether I, you know, the devil on my shoulders saying, you know, don't urge for him to go to England. But, yeah, you have to say that he definitely deserves a shot.
He most certainly does. And again, we shall have to wait and see. Will Brendan McCullum bite the bullets and put Harry Brook in that starting 11?
That's a great point, actually. That's a great point. I should have mentioned that. I hadn't even thought of that. He's exactly the sort of player that Brendan McCullum would like.
Yes, he is.
His style, yeah, he should be in there.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we, Matt? Again, an interesting selection headache for the Three Lions heading in to the summer of 2022. And of course, another player banging that England test door down is, of course, Matt Parkinson. We've had the conversation many a time here on the podcast about the possibility of Parky being in that England setup, in the test arena, in that starting 11. And he got match figures of 6 for 143 from 55.5 overs this week. Very, very well played yet again from the Lancashire leg spin wizard. And if we look at the current leading wicket takers in Division 1 so far, Parky just so happens to be second with 23 wickets, an average of 23.47. So again, we talk about the wider England discussion. Matt Parkinson definitely helping himself out and doing himself no disservice there when it comes to selection in this year's County Championship. Who's top? Hassan Ali.
Oh.
That's who's top, Matt, on 24 wickets.
There you know.
So there we go. Yeah, both Lancashire bowlers, which is actually quite interesting. If you're a Yorkshire fan, if you're a Lancashire fan, however, absolutely fantastic signs. But talking of bowling, let's go to a game which let's just say, wasn't for the bowlers this week. I just want to get it out of the way, to be honest. Warwickshire versus Northamptonshire at Edgbaston, one of the highest scoring draws I think I've ever seen in the second city. We've spoken so many times already. We're three games in to this review show, and we've mentioned the toss in every single one. I promise I won't do it for all eight. But in this one again, the social media reaction to Will Rhodes winning the toss and electing to bowl first was so one-sided. Public opinion was obviously to bat first, and Northants definitely showed why, scoring 597 for six in their first innings. Ricardo Vasconcelos was superb, racking up 156 from 197 balls, including 21 fours and two sixes. And Kiwi opener Will Young, who loves a century against Warwickshire, it seems. He scored one against us up at Durham last season as well. He scored 134 from 230 balls, 16 fours and two sixes, to amass a record 287 run opening stand for the East Midlands County. The previous record for Northants in a game against Warwickshire was 176. Matt, I'm going to test your knowledge. Do you know who that was set by? I'll be very impressed.
No, go on. Who was it?
It was Colin Milburn and Brian Reynolds.
Oh, of course it was.
So there we go. An interesting piece of trivia. And again, a fantastic opening stand, to say the least. And in addition to those two, who, as I said, just made batting look so easy on this surface, I will admit it was a featherbed. It was incredibly flat, very consistent bounce, little to no turn or grip for the spin bowlers either, but they were absolutely sensational. After a pretty good opening spell, it has to be said, from Oliver Hannan-Dalby, he did produce some pressure early on. The run rate was right down. I think it was below two in the first 10 overs. But then after they started getting some rhythm, yeah, the runs just didn't seem to stop coming for Northants this week. And Luke Proctor, again, he's had a very, very good start to the season in 2022. In fact, in Northants' five games so far, Luke Proctor has averaged 118.6 with the bat in hand. He's racked up 356 runs in six innings. So fair play to Luke Proctor so far. He's having quite the profound impact on this Northants batting lineup. And Josh Cobb as well, absolutely excellent. A quick fire 66, hit some massive sixes as well off the bowling of Danny Briggs. As Northants, as I said, just racked up the runs for fun. And I mentioned this last week. I wanted to see multiple big contributions. It was the one thing that I was pointing out, because we'd seen some good contributions here and there from the likes of Proctor, Rob Keogh, Ricardo Vasconcelos and Young at times, but we hadn't seen it all come together in one real substantial innings. This just so happened to occur in Edgbaston this week. So some promising signs from a batting perspective for Northants as a club. But then in response, again, the Bears themselves just put on a bit of a batting masterclass, and two men in particular who I have to give a massive, massive mention to, are Sam Hain, 202 not out. Sam's first century for the Bears since August 2021, which just so happened to be against Lancashire up at Old Trafford. He scored 450 plus scores in that time. There's been a lot of talk about conversion rates. Why is he not scoring three figures? And you could just see when he reached that century, the first of the double century, you could see just how much it meant to him. It was a fantastic moment. He was running, sprinting down the wickets. He kissed the helmet on the badge. He let out a massive roar of emotion. I'm absolutely elated for Sam. So well batted, Mr. Hain. Really good to see him back in the big runs. And then someone who, in my opinion, does not get enough recognition on the wider county circuit. And Matt, I'd love to know your opinions on this guy. But certain Matt Lamb, 155 not outs in this game. He's currently averaging 94 in this year's championship. Do you think he goes under the radar in county cricket?
I think he's one of a number of players who go under the radar. Yeah, I do. I mean, I remember him at Trent Bridge last season. I'm fairly certain he got, I'm pretty sure he got a few, and that pretty much sealed a win for them. I'm just trying to think. I'm pretty sure it was him. But yeah, no, he's a classy player. He really is. And there's certain individuals that try and pan the standard of county cricket, and they're just wrong. You know, you see these players, and these players aren't even being talked about as among the very best level. Now, I know, obviously, we've got the England players back for this round, so there's always going to be, you know, those real big names. But there's these players that just consistently do their job, and they don't really get talked about. County fans are perfectly happy. Just keep hold of him, let him do his job, and let him, you know, keep scoring runs and for Warwickshire. I think Sam Hayne, I mean, I know he's a little bit more, there's maybe a few more calls for him to get a shot in the England white ball team, but he's another one, really. I've not seen him really, there's no massively vociferous call for him to get picked for England. But, you know, there's just these quality, consistent batters that do so well at this level. And, yeah, they just don't get talked about. And there should be more. But, yeah, Matt Lamb is another one that's come through Warwickshire, isn't he? And they've got quite a good track record. I mean, I think maybe Ian Bell among the finest most recently. And then, Sam Hayne batting it again at number four. And now Matt Lamb, and Rob Yates is another, isn't he? He's a youngster who's coming through. They've got a good track record.
Well, we most certainly have. And it's a fantastic time to be a Warwickshire fan. It really is. But I'm not going to wax too lyrical, obviously, because, you know, we do have a time limit on this show this week. But very, very impressed, actually, with Warwickshire's batting so far this summer. In fact, before that Surrey game, it was 4 years before Warwickshire had actually amassed a 500-plus run total. We've now done it on two separate occasions in 2022. So a massive, massive step forward for the club with the bat in hand. And obviously the likes of Sam Hayne, Matt Lamb, the captain Will Rhodes as well. As I mentioned, he did get quite a bit of heat and flack on social media for that decision. But he did produce the goods with the bat, and I was absolutely gutted when he got out on 99. He deserved that century. But in fairness, it was a good ball from Jack White. Safe catch behind the stumps from Lewis McManus as well. But really, really good positive sign, actually, for the Bears captain. Hopefully this is the start of some good form for Will in this year's County Championship. But Matt, I'm not actually going to analyse too much more into this game because, as I said, it was a featherbed. You know, the bowlers, they tried, they worked their absolute socks off. In particular, the likes of Simon Kerrigan, Jack White for Northants and for Warwickshire, the likes of Nathan McAndrew and Oliver Hannon-Dalby. They really did put everything into this game for incredibly little reward. But I just have one final pertinent question from this game. Who will be happier with that result? Because in my opinion, I think it'll be Northamptonshire, especially considering they're without the likes of Tom Taylor, Ben Sanderson, both those guys were rested for this game. They've come to the home of the defending champions, taken home 14 points, and as I mentioned beforehand, they've also put together a masterful batting performance. Would you agree with that particular piece of analysis?
I would. Wholeheartedly, yeah. Warwickshire, Edgbaston is, you know, it's a really, really tough place to go.
Like, as Notts found out last year.
Well, hey, yeah, thank you for that. And indeed twice, in fact, did the double, didn't you? Won at Trent Bridge as well. You're absolutely right. It's a really, really difficult place to go. They've got some really quality players. You had to get the defending champions line in there, didn't you, of course? I completely agree. It's satisfying. Don't you just love it when a plan comes together? Northamptonshire did, and their big contributions. And it's a really, really, yes, like you said, it was an absolute road, but it's a really, really solid platform. It's that time in the middle which can be so beneficial, and it's a really good opportunity now for them to take, another game, take that game on, and then go into the white ball block. It's come at a good time. Things are clicking, and yeah, like you said, it's defending champions. It's tough. I would agree. I think Warwickshire would be expecting to win that game. And so for Northants to walk out of there with as many points as they did is impressive, and they'll be happy.
Absolutely, Matt. To be honest, I would agree with that piece of analysis from yourself there, mate. And moving on then from that game at Edgbaston, let's go to our fourth and final Division 1 game in the sixth round, where Kent and Surrey played out a rain-affected draw, unfortunately, down in Beckenham. Now, although this did end in a rain-affected draw, one of the best pieces of trivia in cricket history was arguably created in Beckenham this weekend, because Surrey's 671 for 9 declared is the highest score in first-class cricket history when no players scored a century in the innings itself. What a tremendous quiz question that'll be. In the future, we might have to use that on a question of cricket here at TCCP. And Matt, in terms of Surrey, again, we mention it every single week, so we're not going to go too much in detail with regards to the batting, but another impressive performance, wasn't it? 671 runs. You look at the contributions. Ryan Patel scoring 76. Ollie Pope scoring 96. Ben Folkes 91. Jamie Overton 93. Sam Curran 78. Colin de Condom scoring 66. Jordan Clark batting at number 10 scoring 54. Frankie Worrell, the new signing at number 11, scoring 44. They really are a juggernaut in this year's championship, aren't they? The Brown Caps.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Their batting lineup is something spectacular, isn't it? It's just that I did get a text from a friend of mine actually who said there'll be some big fines handed out at Surrey, all of them getting into the 90s and not quite converting. So, yeah, I mean, there'll be that individual disappointment, but that little stat about the highest score without scoring, without individual century, it's probably almost enough to take away that disappointment, you know, knowing that you were part of that, I suppose. Yeah, it's the rain definitely wrecked their chances, didn't it? But they, yeah, they're such a strong team. So, yeah, fair play, Surrey.
Well, they are an incredibly, incredibly strong outfit indeed in 2022. And I mentioned this beforehand. I'm pretty sure I brought this up quite a few times on the podcast. The real impressive thing with Surrey so far, at least in my view, has been the bowling. Because last season, they had lots of players averaging high scores in the championship, but the bowling unit didn't quite click. In 2022, however, that's not been the case. And in this game, after amassing that mammoth total, bowling Kent out for 230 runs on that wicket was absolutely superb. It really was a great combined bowling display. And one bowler in particular, who I'm really impressed with at the moment, is Will Jacks. Because I mentioned this at the start of the season, I thought Surrey needed a frontline spin bowler. When you've got the likes of Amar Verdi, Dan Moriarty being kept out of that 11, I just felt in terms of control, in terms of changing the tempo, the rhythm of the game, that Surrey could utilise one of those young spin bowlers because they're specialists. It's what they do so well. But I will say that so far, Will Jacks has done that role quite superbly. So shout out to Will Jacks, took 4 for 65. In this particular game. And again, we talk about control. He really did dictate the tempo of that Kent innings quite nicely. So big up to the young Surrey all-rounder. And then on the flip side, Matt, I suppose, from the positives associated with Surrey, we do still have to talk about Kent's bowling, because this is not just becoming a worry. This is a worry now, because they've not conceded less than 500 runs all summer long. We're 6 rounds in to the 2022 County Championship. I asked this last week, I'm pretty sure, but where do they go from here? Because I'm looking at the stats on the screen right now, and I just want to read these out, really, for the listeners out there. Kent's bowlers so far, Nathan Gilchrist has got 15 wickets, an average of 38. Then the next best bowler is Matt Quinn. He's averaging 48.3. Then there's Hamidullah Kadri on 49.33. George Linder, he's only played 2 games, but he's averaging 64. Jackson Birds, unfortunately, now has had to go back to Australia as a result of an injury, but he was averaging 75. And then Jack Gleaning, Matt Milnes and Darren Stevens, all averaging well over 100 with the ball in hand. How can they reverse their fortunes? A bit like the Gloucestershire question, because they've got the batting capabilities. Ben Compton has been in exceptional form so far, but you can't win games of cricket if you're conceding 500 every single game. What changes would you make to that Kent outfit heading in to the next couple rounds of championship matches?
It's a really, really tough one, isn't it? You can't obviously take the Surrey result in isolation, because like I said, Surrey are a really strong side, and you know, if they'd got 671 on their own and Kent were performing otherwise, then people would go, oh well, it's Surrey, so you know, move on. But yeah, you're absolutely right, it's a really, really tough situation to be in. And yeah, you're not going to win games of cricket, are you? So yeah, you can't say just coach them, can you? Because you can almost coach batting. You know, you can look at where people are, you know, perhaps you can spot deficiencies in people's technique, and you know, you can work to rectify those, and especially when you're facing certain bowlers. But you know, ultimately, bowling is just about getting it on the spot and making sure that you can't be scored off and build the pressure. And, you know, not only are Kent, they've not really got that pressure-building bowler, have they? You know, the wickets are being shared around because, obviously, there's no one kind of spearhead that can get a 5-4. I mean, you know, Gilchrist has been probably their best performer so far. But there's no, you know, he's got 3 wickets in this, but there's no that there isn't that spearhead like certain other teams have got. But then at the same time, there isn't that pressure builder who doesn't get wicket, but who can, you know, bowl at maybe, let's say, less than 2.5 and over. I mean, Milne's conceded at more than 4.5. Jack Leaning, I mean, they even got Daniel Bell Drummond bowling, didn't they, at one point, which kind of shows you the stickiness of the situation that they find themselves in. So, yeah, it's one that they're going to have to sort out because, like you said, they can't. The best you can hope for if your team, you know, if you pick to bowl first and then your team, the opposition rack up more than 500, then the best you can hope for is a draw. If you bat first and even if you perform, but then you can't get to a point where you can bowl the opposition out on, or effectively, you know, even if you can bat the opposition out of the game, if you can't take 20 wickets, then, you know, the batting performance, even if you can score 500, then it purely doesn't matter. So, yeah, it's a really tough one for Kent, and it's something that they're going to have to rectify for sure.
Well, they most certainly are, Matt. But fortunately for the southeastern side, there is a certain Matt Henry on his way. Can he be the man to act as a catalyst and reverse their fortunes? We shall have to wait and see. Only time will tell. But I do worry for Kent and Gloucestershire in particular so far, two sides which have got off to relatively slow starts of the season. And again, I do think the game between those two counties is going to be absolutely pivotal in the wider context of Division 1 this season. And talking of Division 1 then, let's have a look at how those four games impacted the points table. So top of the table on 105 points after 6 rounds of Surrey County Cricket Club. And they've had a fantastic start to the summer. I think everyone's in agreement, worthy table toppers at the moment. They've won 3, drawn 3, 20 batting bonus points, the most in the entire division. It's been quite the start to the summer of 2022 for the Brown Caps. Then in second are Lancashire on 85 points. In third are Hampshire on 81 points. In fourth are Yorkshire on 76 points. In fifth are Warwickshire on 62 points. In sixth are Somerset on 56 points. In seventh are Essex on 54 points. In eighth are Northamptonshire, also on 54 points. In ninth are Kent on 40 points. And in 10th and final position in Division 1 so far are Gloucestershire on 35 points. So Division 1 starting to take shape in 2022. Still lots of cricket to be played, of course. But yeah, things are starting to heat up in the first division of English and Welsh county cricket in the summer of 2022. But moving on from Division 1 then, Matt, let's go to Division 2. And seeing as you were there for this game, what better place to start than at the home of cricket, where Middlesex and Nottinghamshire, two promotion contenders in Division 2 this summer, played out quite the draw at Lord's Cricket Ground. So Matt, I'll pass over to you, mate. What did you make of this clash of title contenders down at the home of cricket?
Yeah, it was brilliant to watch. I mean, there's plenty of things throughout it. You know, obviously, the highlight absolutely has to be, well, all right, two highlights, I suppose, from a Nottinghamshire perspective. Well, one is Stephen Mullaney, who was just gently lofting it into all parts of central London. Nottinghamshire's fastest ever county championship 50. Tell you what, shall I spin this round? So that was Nottinghamshire's second fastest first-class century. Fastest in the championship, because the previous record was 48 balls in the MCC champion county game in 2006. Mark Elam.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Great trivia.
There you go. There's plenty of trivia on this podcast, didn't there? Yeah. That was fantastic. And then, yeah, Luke Fletcher, who apparently seems to be morphing into a bit of an actual all-rounder, despite being number 11. I spoke to Luke after day 4, and he's really sort of quite magnanimous about it all. You know, you say, oh, you've just hit a 50 as an opener, despite being down as a number 11 in a batting order. And he just said, oh, yeah, it made sense, didn't it? It was the night watchman duty, and I didn't want to, we don't want to lose one of our openers, so I'll go in and do it. And yeah, mate, you will go in and do it. You'll hit a 50. But the first 50 was really entertaining. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't actually there for day two. So I missed that. But that was, I mean, the sixes, just, yeah. But there was that short boundary, which they were able to take advantage of. I think Middlesex might be kicking themselves a little bit because they probably didn't take full advantage and, you know, they allowed Nottingham just to get away. They had him at 154 in the first innings and then they allowed him to get 415. And then it was a good wicket and they were bundled out for 195. So they were already chasing the game when the follow-on wasn't enforced. It was a tough one for Middlesex. They weren't, you know, it was a draw, but it was really, it was Nottingham just to lose. And they lost it to the weather, didn't they, that final day. Yes, Middlesex were resistant on the final day and Sam Robson scored a good 100. But it was a frustrating one because of the weather. And I think Middlesex almost, you know, it's a tough one, isn't it? When you're so far behind in the game, sometimes you can find yourself kind of, you don't want to fold, but you can find that happening, like we saw up at Durham for the Nottinghamshire game. They were so far behind and they just crumbled. And that's, you know, the mental edge you can just go. But Middlesex almost knew, you know, they'd no doubt seen the forecast and they almost thought, right, well, we've just got to get through the first hour and a half, get through to the rain, and then the rain will, you know, it's forecast, it'll come and it should, you know, hopefully get us out of here with a draw, which, to be honest, is probably a bit more than they deserved. I mean, yes, the title contenders, but Nottinghamshire just dominated that game, really they did. And there was a bit of chat on social media afterwards about why didn't Nottinghamshire enforce the follow-on. Plain and simple, Middlesex had bowled, you know, Ethan Bamber had bowled 20-odd overs, Toby Rowland-Jones had bowled 32. They then batted for less than a day, and suddenly they were back out there again in the evening. So there's a lot to be said for that, you know, just keep them out there. I suppose you could say, why didn't they enforce it? Well, if they had enforced it, then Notts would have been bowling on an absolutely glorious day three, and they would have been themselves faced with a potentially tricky chase of maybe 150 on day four, so under overcast conditions, and with the likes of Bamber and Toby Rowland-Jones bowling at you. So it could so easily have been flipped if Notts had enforced the follow-on, which is a weird thing to say, isn't it? Because when you've got that option, you're in such a dominant position that you almost, it's so unlikely that you are going to lose. But personally, and this is not, you know, me speaking as an employee of the club, this is me speaking, let's say, as a cricket fan, I do actually think it was the right decision, because were it not for the rain, they would have won that game. So, yeah, it was frustrating from a Nottinghamshire point of view, but really, really exclusively entertaining to watch during the 3.5 days that we did get some play.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. It was a fantastic game to watch, and a massive reason behind that, aside from Haseeb Hameed's century as well, I thought that was a lovely moment in the first innings, and obviously elated to see Haseeb lift the bat at Lord's. But the main man in this game was, of course, Luke Fletcher. And to keep up with that theme of incredible stats in tonight's podcast, Luke Fletcher became the first player in first-class history to hit a half-century batting at 11 and opening the batting in the same game. What a stat that is, and obviously, Luke Fletcher, a beloved figure here in county cricket. There aren't many more popular people when it comes to the county circuit than Big Fletch. So shout out to Luke Fletcher, provided us with some fantastic entertainment in this week's encounter. And Sam Robson as well. Have to give him a huge shout out after that first innings collapse, really, from Middlesex, 195 all out, to show that grit, that fortitude, that mental fight that Sam Robson showed, I thought was very, very impressive, and of course integral and pivotal to the wider results for the London-based side. So Matt, I think I know the answer already to this question, but of the two sides, who do you think would be happier with that result? Personally speaking, I think I would go Middlesex.
Yeah, it's close, isn't it? Only just Middlesex. I mean, it's not like they were thoroughly outplayed for 3.5 days. No, yeah, it will be Middlesex, won't it? I suppose you're always going to get results like that. You're always going to get results where the rain frustrates you, and it's, you know, it's cricket's eternal battle, isn't it, with the weather. We can try ground with roofs if we want, but yeah, it's just that constant battle. And it's a real shame because sometimes, you know, the rain comes and it, you know, if it had rained at Edgbaston when, you know, it was Warwickshire were four down and it was so obviously going to be a draw, then you think, oh, well, it would have been a draw anyway. But that has ruined what could have been a really, really exciting conclusion. I mean, Middlesex weren't going to win, were they? Let's face it, they weren't in a position where they could win the game. But they've, you know, it denied what could have been hopefully a statement victory. Like you said, you know, two title chasers, Middlesex up at the top end as well, Nottinghamshire. You know, constantly call them pre-tournament or pre-season favourites. But yeah, it is what it is. Cricket will always have this battle. And yeah, it's just going to be Middlesex that are happier with it. I mean, we had plenty in on day one because that was when Brendan McCullum was announced as head coach. And so there were plenty of, you know, people, plenty of journos in that media centre watching, and they were just watching Nottinghamshire thoroughly outplay Middlesex as they continue to do for the rest of the game. But no, they've just got to, you know, we've got Derbyshire next up at Trent Bridge on Thursday, and all they've got to, you know, they've just got to carry that frustration forward, and, you know, they've got to carry two things forward, haven't they? They've got to carry the belief that they know that this was a good performance, and then the frustration of not being able to win this game and just go and get, hopefully, 24 points next week.
Ooh, that's interesting, Matt. We shall see if that does come true in the East Midlands Derby. We'll have to wait and see, though, won't we, mate? Of course, cricket is a very unpredictable game. But before we talk about Derbyshire, Nottinghamshire's opposition in that massive game in the next round, we do, of course, have to talk about Durham, another side which haven't had the greatest of starts for the summer of 2022. But I mentioned it in the preview show, that bowling attack could potentially see them being promoted in this year's championship. And in the sixth round, Durham were absolutely superb, beating Glamorgan by 58 runs up at the Riverside. And let's face it, there's only one name that's on the lips of everybody after this game, and that is, of course, Matt Potts. In particular, after today, when we found out the news that Saqib Amood has unfortunately been ruled out of the remainder of the 2022 season as a result of a lumbar stress fracture, Matt Potts has done himself absolutely no disservice with this bowling performance in Chesler Street this week. He took 4 for 61 and then career best figures of 7 for 40. And I was just watching this on the live stream, and I absolutely adore the way in which Matt Potts bowls. He's not express pace. He's not 90, 92 mile an hour, at least in my view. I don't have a speed gun, unfortunately, to give a proper measurement. But when he bowls short spells, they're really, really explosive. They're really entertaining. They keep you gripped to the action. And he's just been a revelation so far this summer. Again, this has been the podcast of stats, but these are way too good to miss out on. Matt Potts is currently the leading wicket taker in Division 2 with 35 wickets, an average of 18.57. And he's got a bowling strike rate of 40. That is absolutely mind-blowing for county championship cricket. And he took his fourth fifer of the summer already. We're just six rounds in. That's absolutely ludicrous from the young Durham seamer. What makes it even more ridiculous, though, is when you look at who's second, Sam Connors, who's had a good start to the summer as well. He's taken 21 wickets. That's a 14-wicket gap between those two bowlers, and we're not even midway through the summer. So Matt's, again, recurring theme of tonight's podcast, the whole England debate. You mentioned Brendan McCullum there, and of course the lack of seam bowlers at England's disposal. I think it's obvious that Potts will be in the squad, but would you take that leap of faith and play him in one of the games this summer? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, you know, you have to. If county cricket is the breeding ground, isn't it, for these young players? That's what it is. It's the domestic game produces players of a quality for the international game. And if you're consistently doing your job and consistently doing your job well, as he is, then, you know, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take that leap of faith? And we've seen now, obviously, this is a bit of a ridiculous comparison, but we've seen that leaps of faith in the past have worked. See James Anderson, who was brought straight into the England team in 2003. You know, he barely played any few games for Lancashire, just had a little good run, and suddenly, you know, well, maybe not suddenly, but, you know, 2 decades later, he's England's best ever bowler. And that's almost what you have to do sometimes. I'm not saying he's going to be the next James Anderson and be a hell of a feat if anybody manages to ever get anywhere near what he's done. But it works. Taking these leaps of faith work. And frankly, I think if England are going to take a leap of faith, then they've got no better opportunity to do it right now. They've already took a leap of faith by bringing Rob Key in to do, you know, he's not really got much experience in cricket administration. You know, he's deeply knowledgeable, don't get me wrong, but he's a broadcaster. Since retiring, obviously, he's a broadcaster. Then you've got Brendan McCullum, who's got next to no experience, or in fact, possibly no experience as a red ball coach. He's got, you know, quite a bit of experience as a white ball, but next to no experience as a red ball coach. So why not? You've done it with the administrators. You've done it with the head coach. Why not do it with the players? You know, it's thing is as well, you've almost got nothing to lose, because if you do play him and he does poorly, then he's got all the time in the world to go back to Durham, keep working, keep, you know, go back and keep taking those wickets. And, you know, that's what he'll do. If you play him and it goes well, then perfect. Revelation. So you've either got, oh, well, it was unlikely to work anyway, or, wow, brilliant. You know, you're not going to get, what are you doing picking him for? What's going on here? Why would you do that? That's a shocking decision. You're going to get, you know, a bit of, oh, well, or fantastic. So for me, it's a win-win situation. And like I've said, Key, McCullum, England are taking jumps right now. So yeah, why not?
Oh, it'll be interesting, won't it? I think there's a lot of strong rumours circulating that he's going to be in the squad for the New Zealand series, but will England bite the bullets and play Matt Potts? Again, only time will tell, but may I just say, having heard about his character from Durham players, so from the likes of Chris Rushworth and Scott Borthwick, I think Scott Borthwick said he was the hardest trainer he's ever seen in county cricket. He does thoroughly, thoroughly deserve this opportunity. And again, looking at his career stats in first-class cricket, 77 wickets in 24 games. I mean, he's earned his chance. So fingers crossed, Durham fans, that Matt Potts will get that opportunity to play for England, maybe in the summer of 2022, maybe in the summer of 2023. Who knows? But I'll tell you what, he's worked very hard and certainly does deserve the opportunity to be in the squad, at least in my view. But aside from Matt Potts then, Matt, I do just want to mention something else about Durham this week as well. Shout out to the club. They produced a great initiative. We do like to give shout outs to these initiatives on the podcast, but on day 3, sun was shining, glorious day, up in the northeast, and kids were let in for free to watch Ben Stokes take on Marnus Labuschagne. So that was a massive positive for Durham. Of course, the bowlers and batters, in fairness, did put on quite the show for the young fans in attendance. And talking of the bats, two players who stood out to me this week from a Durham perspective were first and foremost Keegan Peterson. 78 in the first innings. He's had 2 back-to-back half-century scores now. Scored 6 boundaries this week. I thought he looked in very good touch. And then in the second innings, we mentioned him already, Scott Borthwick. Very, very impressive. Glamorgan Seamers were just beginning to build some momentum. They were really beginning to make inroads into that Durham batting lineup. And then the captain stood up strong, produced a captain's knock, 90 from 124 balls, including 12 fours. Take a bow, Scott Borthwick, helped his side to the victory in the end alongside England opener Alex Lees, who scored 61. On the flip side though, Matt, before we move on to the Derbyshire versus Worcestershire game, let's just talk a little bit about Glamorgan. They'll be bitterly disappointed by this, won't they? In particular, we've seen that performance against Nottinghamshire at Trent Bridge, the 7-wicket victory, chasing a sub-200 total. This was an achievable target, wasn't it? It really was. And in particular, when you think they had that first innings lead, they had an opportunity to go on and win this game. Of course, they did have a bit of bad fortune with David Lloyd, the captain, being sidelined through illness, and then he came back a little bit later in the batting lineup. But they'll be disappointed with the bat this week, won't they? The Welsh outfit.
Yeah, they will. It was achievable, wasn't it? I mean, those fourth innings chases, I think, you know, I've kind of said this before, anything north of 150 is difficult. Anything north of 200, you're really talking, is very, very tough. And they were just on the cut. They were just on the cut, weren't they? They were chasing, you know, 196 to win. they will be disappointed, and I think they'll be more disappointed in the way that they kind of almost let themselves be defeated, because, you know, they were 70 for three. That's the backbone of the chase broken. You know, they're not quite halfway there, but they're not far off. And to be in that position, I think at 70 for three, you'd probably favour Glamorgan. You know, you're only 126, 7 wickets in hand. That's doable. That's more than doable. So who knows? Maybe if they'd got to 100 for three, they might have just had enough to get over the line. But it was that manner that they then just sort of subsided, because obviously that's such the entertaining thing about these fourth innings chases, in that they're often over quickly, aren't they? Whether a team is bowled out or reaches the total, because you don't generally tend to see teams sort of grinding their way to these scores, do you? They'll go after these scores and they'll get them, as we saw at Trent Bridge when they just almost effortlessly knocked it off, and you know it was sealed with a six. So, or the team will bowl them out. So for Durham to do that shows a lot of, you know, a lot of character to fight back from a position that many would probably consider a losing position to be in. It's really impressive from them, and it's really impressive from Matt Potts. Obviously, what we've said about him, he fully deserves that praise. But yeah, it was. I think they will be disappointed from the manner in which, yeah, not just of the defeat, but in the level of, you know, the position that they got themselves in, to then almost throw that away, really, especially when you've got characters like Manus Labuschagne, who, you know, he wants to win. He's always up for that, and, you know, he will no doubt have been chirping away when he was batting. So, yeah, it'll be a hell of a lot of disappointment for Glamorgan, considering the position that they were in, yeah.
To be honest, Matt, I'd agree with that. But then again, for the Welsh side, they can take solace and comfort in the fact that they have had a good start to the summer. They are well and truly in the mix. They're in the hunt for those promotion spots. And again, you might just have to, you know, put this down as a little bit of a bad performance. But fingers crossed, Glamorgan fans, the Welsh side will come back stronger heading in to the rest of this year's County Championship. But moving down then from the North East, let's go to the East Midlands. Let's go to the Ancora ground and talk about Derbyshire, because the Falcons played out a relatively high-scoring draw with Worcestershire on home soil. Now, again, we're not going to go into too much analysis here, to be honest, unfortunately, because, again, it was another high-scoring draw. There wasn't a result in this. But first and foremost, Derbyshire are unbeaten in county cricket so far in 2022. It's been quite the turnaround for Mickey Arthur's men. Currently got one victory and four draws. And even again this week, you know, we mentioned how impressive they've been all season long. In the first inning, Sam Connors, the bowler I mentioned beforehand, I said he'd have a good season, and he most certainly is. He took 5 for 109 in the first innings. And Ryan Sidebottom, the loanee from Warwickshire, taking 3 for 76 from 19.5 overs to restrict Worcestershire to 368 all out. Now, that does seem like quite a high total, but it was a flat wicket. And Derbyshire showed that with the bat in hand, racking up 565 for 8 declared. And obviously, Shan Masood, we mentioned him so many times here on the podcast already. He's probably going to reach the 1,000-run mark sooner rather than later. Let's be honest, probably by the end of May. In fact, he's currently on a total of 826 runs, an average of 118. Which was helped this week by 113 from 131 balls. But someone I wanted to give a special mention to this week is Anuj Dahl, his second ever first-class century. He scored 114 in this particular game. Something which Mickey Arthur mentioned, Matt, in a press conference, which Brooke Guest alluded to in an interview which will be coming out very shortly here on the Counter Cricket podcast, was about Derbyshire being a hard team to beat. Not necessarily being the team, the dominant team in Division 2, but being a team that's hard to break down and a team which can produce victories here and there. That's the objective for 2022. With contributions from the likes of Masood, from the likes of Brooke Guest, Anuj Dahl in this game, for example, and of course the bowlers, would you say that they've achieved that objective so far in 2022?
Yeah, absolutely they have. I mean, there's plenty of these games that they would be expected to lose otherwise. And you look at kind of the way, I'll talk about the Nottinghamshire game, obviously. I mean, Justin Melton talked about this in the pre-season, didn't it, in the previous show, when he said that you look at the attack that Derbyshire would had in their armoury versus the attack that Nottinghamshire had, they were, you know, they were, I don't want to say they were wiped out because that sounds a little bit over the top, but, you know, they were well beaten. And given that the quality of those two respective outfits, it's what you would expect. But the turnaround that he's made, and I should point out as well, I mean, not that I'm about to say he's completely wrong because he's an international standard cricket coach, but he's absolutely right in that that is the platform that you want to take on and build on. You want to be a hard team to beat. If you don't, you might not be winning games, but if you're not losing them and you're constantly just consistently picking up those points, you know, you're getting, however, you're getting the 8 points for a draw, and with Sam Mathood scoring the runs as well at the top of the order, you're getting those batting bonus points. And then, like you said, Sam Connors, you're picking up just points here and there. Keep going. Unassuming. You know, people still think of Derbyshire as maybe one of the weaker counties in first-class cricket. If they're just gradually, you know, no one forced, you know, and then suddenly they, you know, they get to a point in this season, you know, with six rounds in, where they've not yet lost the game, people start to sit up and take notice. I mean, I was, when I saw the news, whenever it was, October, November, that they'd hired Mickey Arthur, I was stunned that they'd managed to pull that off. It's a real, real coup for Derbyshire cricket. And yeah, it's not half paying dividends, is it?
Well, it most certainly is. And again, long may it continue. I think I've made it pretty obvious here on the podcast. I do have a soft spot for Derbyshire as a county. Again, they are always the target of those who do want to cut the counties, but I'm just really happy for them. Again, they had such a rough time of it in 2021. I'm very, very happy to see these Midlands outfit performing well so far in Division 2 of the County Championship. And in terms of their opposition, Matt, maybe not the most memorable of bowling displays for Worcestershire, but two massive centuries in this game. First and foremost for Jack Haynes. Second consecutive first-class century. And again, we talk about rising stars, players with a lot of potential, lots of promise. Jack Haynes, keep an eye out for this guy. Just oozes class. Out in the middle, got some lovely drives. I thought he was flicking it off the pads nicely this week as well. He looked really, really assured at the crease. So for Worcestershire fans, signs look very, very good for Jack Haynes as he registered 133 from 207 balls. But I think the real key century this week in terms of Worcestershire and the rest of this season was Jake Libby's, because he was the linchpin of that pair's batting lineup in 2021, the club's leading run scorer in the county championship last summer. He scored his first century in 2022, racking up 105 not out in the second innings. Matt, in terms of Worcestershire's season, I suppose so far, how would you analyse the pair's performances, and what would you say are their objectives for the remainder of Division 2? They've been competitive at times, but do you think they're going to make a push, or do you think that might be a bridge too far in the summer of 2022?
I would probably say it's a bridge too far, isn't it? Especially when you look at the quality of the teams that they're likely to be, you know, if you talk about a promotion battle, you know, there's Nottinghamshire up there, Middlesex are up there. I mean, heck, you know, Derbyshire, they're becoming such a hard team to beat that, you know, potentially not far off them. Durham with Matt Potts, I mean, whether they lose him to England, we'll see. But there's a lot of teams that are better than them. There's a lot of teams that have more quality than them. So I think, you know, their target needs to be what Derbyshire's target is. You know, they need to become hard to beat. You know, they've only lost once. It's not, you know, Sussex and Leicestershire are losing half the games already. You know, they're starting to fall off a little bit, and they're probably out of the conversation already. It's harsh to say, but it's probably true. But I think that's what they need to be. You know, Worcestershire need to become that hard to beat team. And, you know, indeed, Nottinghamshire went to New Road last season and failed to beat them. You know, New Road, as long as they can back up that brilliant batting performance on the New Road track, which is, you know, certainly last season was very conducive to batting, then, you know, that's where they can pick up their point. And, you know, if they're putting up 400-500 regularly, you know, not every innings, obviously, but regularly, then that's what they need to be doing for me. Just, yeah, lay that solid platform. And they've been doing it consistently for years. It's really, really impressive how they just bring through this young talent. I mean, Ben Gibbon, again, who actually dismissed Sam Mathew, didn't he? So, you know, that kind of shows the quality that we're dealing with here when he can get a batsman not only of his quality, but in his form out, then that's, you know, that's brilliant for him as a developing young player, and it will continue to pay off for Worcestershire if they can keep bringing these young players through. So, yeah, that should be their target. That's their two targets. Become, in the first team in the short term, become hard to beat, and in the long term, keep developing these players, keep developing these Jack Haynes, these Ben Gibbons, all these other players.
Josh Baker.
Yes, Josh Baker, you're absolutely right. Yeah, they've got some superb prospects. So, yeah, don't lose many more this season. Keep developing these over the coming months and winters and years, and things will click, I think.
Well, fingers crossed for the Worcestershire fans out there that Matt's prediction will come true. Again, become a team that's hard to beat.
I'll be honest, you said Derbyshire, you've got a soft spot for them. I've got a soft spot for Worcestershire, actually. I have. I mean, their ground, it's just a lovely little ground, isn't it? Just by the river. You know, you can see the cathedral. It's one of those proper old school grounds, and it's a lovely little place to visit. And they go about the cricket in the right way, like I said, with that youth development. And it would be really good to see them do well.
Well, there we go, folks. We shall have to wait and see, won't we? If Worcestershire can, of course, get promoted in future seasons. Again, I do think it'll be a bridge too far in 2022, just my personal opinion, but. Again, the signs do look quite promising. And you mentioned those youngsters. Yeah, they have got some serious, serious talent on both the academy and, of course, in the main squad down at New Road in 2022. But Matt, moving on then to our eighth and final game of this week. Let's go to Grace Road, where Leicestershire and Sussex played out a pretty high-scoring draw. But it did get very interesting at the end, as we shall discuss in due course. I want to start with Leicestershire, actually. First and foremost, unfortunately, as we'll find out in the next few minutes, currently bottom of the table in 2022. But Leicestershire won the toss, elected to have a bat first, and were skittled out for 210 runs, with not a single one of their players crossing 50. In that first innings, Lewis Hill's 35 being the high score for the home side. But aside from the on-field stuff, again, I do like to give shout-outs to the initiatives. And this week, 4,000 free tickets being given out. I'm not sure if the entire allocation was actually provided over the course of the 4 days, but at least from what I've seen on Twitter and from the club themselves, it's been a massive success. So shout out to Sean Jarvis, shout out to Leicestershire, and of course the Cricket Supporters Association and County Cricket Matters as well for that scheme. Absolutely fantastic, to say the least, and good to see both people young and old taken advantage of it in Leicester this week. But in terms of their opposition, Matt, Sussex, a team which lacks a lot of experience, but there is talent there. I don't think that can be denied at all, to be honest. I thought in the first innings, Aaron Beard, the loanee from Essex, he was very good. He took 3 for 58. Henry Crocombe as well, one of the youngsters born and raised in Sussex, took 3 for 37. But the two players I really want to take a deep dive into this week are Tom Clark and Archie Lenham. So Tom Clark, as you will be well aware, Matt, has had quite the start to the summer. Scored his maiden first-class ton against Notts in the opening round, and then scored a career-best 138 in this particular game. Now, the thing with Tom beforehand, he'd had these little starts, but the real Achilles heel of his game up until this season had been temperament. He'd get these real solid starts and then throw it all away. But so far in the summer of 2022, he's getting these starts, he's building on them. He's not allowing the excitement to get to his head. He's staying within himself, he's acting reserved, cool, calm, collected, and it is paying dividends. So shout out to Tom Clark, I thought he was absolutely sensational. And then Archie Lenham, someone who I've got a lot of time for, 17-year-old leg spinner from Sussex. Obviously had a breakthrough season in the T20 Blast last summer. But in two first-class games, he's been very impressive. And in this game, 4 for 84 in the second innings from 29 overs. Matt, just how impressed were you with his bowling? For a 17-year-old leg spinner to come out there, bowl googly after googly after googly for 29 overs, that takes some doing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think it might have been you that said this, actually, on Twitter, and I completely agreed with it. The it would be so easy for a young leg spinner to go out and be quite conservative and be quite sort of, you know, wary. Because leg spinners, if you don't get it right, or spinners generally, if you don't get it right, you can, you know, an experienced batter will put you into the middle of next week. But he doesn't, does he? He just goes out there and plays without fear. And, you know, obviously you said all this, I'm preaching to the choir, but it's absolutely true. And he's got to be commended for that and that fearlessness that he shows. And I think that's what makes him so good for T20, isn't it? Because obviously in T20, that's when you're just going to get absolutely hammered all over the place. You're going to, you know, people are going to swing at you. And if you can bowl, you know, if you're so confident in your own ability that you're willing to go out there and do that, then that is worth its weight in gold to any team, isn't it? And, you know, we've just talked about Worcestershire bringing through the youngsters. Sussex are doing the same thing. And it's another reason, you know, I've got a soft spot for them. Yeah, they go about things in the right way. Archie Lennon is a hell of a prospect. And, you know, considering when you see he's only 17, you know, you think of players almost as making maybe the early bow at sort of the age of, you know, 20, 21 and having maybe 5 years to go until they reach the peak, 5-6 years, and then they have a 5-6 year peak. You know, Archie Lennon is already in the team. He's already having a breakout, you know, levels that people are talking about him up and down the country. And he could have 10 years before he's anywhere near his peak. You know, we could be sat here in 2032 talking about a 27-year-old Archie Lennon who's just took a 5-4, you know, in India for England. It could, honestly, and he could still have 10 years more after that. This is what's so brilliant about it. It's so young. He's got so much time to grow and develop and learn. And, you know, obviously he'll have the benefit of Rashid Khan in the T20, who, you know, while he specialises in white ball, obviously, it's nothing he can't take and think and, oh, well, I can use that, I can use that, I can cherry pick this and that, and I can apply that to my red ball game. And you're thinking, oh, well, this is brilliant, but that might take me 5 years to learn. Okay, you're 22, mate, in 5 years, you know, you're still considered a youngster. So, yeah, he's confident in his ability. He will know what he's got to do to develop, but he's got so much time. It's going to be fun to watch him, without a doubt.
It will indeed, Matt. And, of course, we'll be touching upon his exploits in a lot more detail in the T20 Blast. I've got no doubt whatsoever they'll have another good campaign in 2022 in the shortest format of all. But again, for Sussex, this was a pretty good performance. And on the flip side as well, Leicestershire, it's been a very, very rough start to the summer. And I did mention the fact that maybe towards the end, it did get a little bit closer than they would have wanted to. In terms of that lead, they were 333-9 by the end of their innings. But for a side which has struggled with the bats, I do have to commend the likes of Rishi Patel. I have to commend the likes of Harry Swindoll's Callum Parkinson for the spirit and character that they showed in that second innings. They showed some grit. They showed some fights. And for a side which has struggled to find consistency with the bats, that's all you can ask for, to be honest. So a hard-fought draw. Again, a little bit rain-affected due to some persistent rainfall in Leicester. But I think both sides will take that, to be honest. In particular, Leicester, after a very, very torrid start to the summer, hopefully the Foxes can use this as a bit of a springboard from which to go on and improve their performances for the rest of the summer. But Matt, that is basically it, to be honest, for the 8 games and our analysis of each of the divisional games. But we do, of course, have a couple of tables to look at, with the first being the Division 2 table, which at the end of the 6th round sees Middlesex County Cricket Club at the top on 93 points. In second, a Notts on 84 points. In third, a Glamorgan on 81 points. In fourth, a Durham, after registering their first win of the season, on 79 points. In fifth, a Derbyshire on 79 points as well. In sixth, our Worcestershire on 66 points. In seventh, a Sussex on 53 points. And at the bottom of Division 2 at the end of the 6th round, our Leicestershire County Cricket Club on 45 points. But of course, we don't just look at the county championship tables to wrap up today's show. We do, of course, have our cricket draft table as well. And unfortunately, for what seems to be the fourth week in a row, Steve-O for England CC didn't do that well this week. We've slipped down some more places. We're now 78th in our own league. So fingers crossed we can improve those performances heading into next week's show. But our top three at the end of the 6th round are the MJS 11, He's moved up one place. He's on 10,639 points. In second are The Missing Links by Rory Law on 10,482 points. And in third place, moving up four places, is Bring Back Branderson, who are the team of Jonathan Crocott, who are on 10,283 points. So well done to those three teams. Absolutely hammering my team at the moment, it has to be said. But of course, plenty of cricket still to go. And fingers crossed, Steve-O for England CC can bounce back strong, just like the big man himself, heading into the rest of the summer. But Matt, that essentially brings us to an end to tonight's episode of TCCP. Of course, just one final thing from me. Thank you very much, as always, for coming on, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, we'll have lots more to discuss in our Round 7 review show next week. But that is it from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.